Welcome back to WordBalloon.com, the comic book conversation show. This is John Sundress. Last weekend, I had the pleasure of hosting panels and interviewing creators of actors and artists at the FXCon in Orlando, Florida. So nice to reconnect with some of my favorite guys in the business, like Art Balthazar, Chuck Dixon, Daniel Way, Gene Haught, Dan Brereton, Mike Perkins, and Chris Moreno, and make new friends like Matt Wagner, Dave Johnson, Joe Pruitt, and Derek Donovan. So much to cover, we'll be spending two episodes on our FX coverage. On this episode, you'll hear from Matt Wagner on the 25th anniversary of Grendel and everything that Dark Horse has planned for this year and beyond. Chuck Dixon and Derek Donovan talk about Connor Hawk, the miniseries from DC Comics. Dave Johnson, the cover artist for Marvel's Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and Vertigo's 100 Bullets, gives us an insider look at his animation work on Ben 10 and some new projects in the works. A pretty special story from Steve Scott, a DC artist who's returned to the world of comics after a career in firefighting and some setbacks due to Hurricane Katrina. The legendary Michael Golden joins us and tells us about his current slate of projects. And Joe Pruitt, Chris Moreno, Mike Perkins, and a slew of creators from Desperado Publishing let us know about their line of classics and new projects on the way. But first, we'll start with Matt Wagner, who's wrapping up his 12 issues of Batman for DC Comics this week and getting ready for the 25th anniversary of Grendel. On the floor at FXCon, I'm speaking right now with Matt Wagner, the creator of Grendel, Mage, also a guy who's done wonderful work for DC on projects like Sandman Mystery Theater, one of my personal favorites, and long-running stuff on Batman. But the big announcement, of course, is it's the 25th anniversary for Grendel, and I know that that means some big new Grendel projects this year.
Yes, it does. In addition to getting the first storyline, Devil by the Dean, back into print, a lovely little hardcover edition that we've recolored into the black, white, and red milieu that has become Hunter Rose's stock and trade. We're putting the original Kimiko black and white issues back into print, and this is kind of like my very first, very fledgling efforts at being published. Then we're doing an Art of Grendel book, very similar to the Art of Sin City, the Art of Usagi, same format. And then we're also doing, or I'm doing, an all-new 8-issue Hunter Rose miniseries that'll premiere sometime in September, maybe October.
Very cool. And in your panel, you said it's the missing pages of Hunter's diary?
We find out that there's a section missing from his journals, and it's never been known why these are missing, and we're going to see why.
You're wrapping up your Batman run as well, which was really cool because you took two old detective stories that were probably no more than 8 pages long, and you fleshed them out into a really interesting time very early in Batman's career and when Julie Madison was still the woman in his life.
Yep. And I always had a fondness for those. You mentioned that you had seen those two stories in your earlier days, and I always had a fondness for those two particularly. The Mad Monk is actually the very first multi-part Batman story in the original version. It's two parts, ran in two issues of Detective Comics, numbers 31 and 32. And the other one appeared in Batman number 1. So
you mentioned that your website is getting a nice overhaul as well coming up.
Yeah, very very excited about that. I've had a website for a while that just never did much of anything with it. It's mattwagnercomics.com. So we're finally going to turn into a very flourishing, up-to-date website. So looking forward to that.
People always wonder about Mage and where it stands right now, and I know Volume 3 is the one that's pending, and you had a very interesting discussion about that unfortunately my tape didn't get. So for the purposes of this, if you don't mind saying, where the status is right now on Mage Volume 3.
Well, Mage is, as I said earlier, Mage is odd because Mage doesn't... I don't decide when to work on Mage. It decides when I'm going to work on it. And so far, the time just hasn't been right to do number 3. I have some ideas in mind. I'm not really scared about going there, but time just hasn't been right because I have other irons in the fire right now. But I will get to it eventually.
Okay. This year is all about Grendel,
yeah.
Including word that Warner Brothers has picked up the option for a potential down-the-road Grendel movie.
Yeah, and they have it in active development right now. They have a couple of writers giving them a pitch on how they would each handle it. So, looking very good. I have a lot of hope for that. It's with Warner Brothers. It's signed up with John Wells Productions, which is an on-site production company at Warner Brothers.
John's known for his TV work on things like The West Wing and Studio 60.
And ER. You know, Dark Horse has had such great luck recently with film versions of their comic books where they weren't only financially successful, they also clung really tightly to the narrative in the comic.
Absolutely.
So... All that makes me feel pretty good about this process. you know, of course it's Hollywood, so I'm not quitting my day job.
We like your day job, man. You always do a great job, whether it's covers or, you know, when you're writing, and of course, when we get the full production and what's coming up with Grendel. So good luck, and I know we'll be doing a full-blown War Balloon when it's a little bit closer to release, and
absolutely,
we'll get into more of that, and also I'll be able to wax nostalgically about things like Sandman Mystery Theater, which has always been a favorite of mine.
Well, I'll be there.
Thanks, man. Hey, everybody. Suntress back in the studio. Let's turn things over to the Matt Wagner panel that I moderated over. Unfortunately, I'd love to have given you the part where I was asking Matt questions, but there was a technical snafu, and we didn't get the tape rolling again until Matt started taking questions from the audience, so we'll pick up at that point. And this first question is, who was Matt's favorite artist that he turned over the art chores of doing Grendel to?
You know, I mean, between the two Grendel Black, White, and Red books, I worked with 40 different artists there. And there were more that I asked that said no or they didn't have time. I don't know, my tastes are pretty wide, so it's always, you know, I kind of don't have favorites of much of anything. It drives my kids batshit because they're always, you know, Dad, what's your favorite movie? You know, I don't have a favorite movie. I don't have a favorite food. I don't have a favorite book. I like too many things. And I always tell them, look, I have a favorite wife, I have a favorite son, and I have a favorite daughter, and that's about it. You know? At which they're like, well, where are your only son and daughter?
Mm-hmm. That's how that worked out.
Yeah, I don't know. It's more just like I'm always open, and if something works out that I can hook up with an artist. All right, like for instance, in the art of Grendel, we have a small section for pinups. So we're casting around right now for some people to do pinups for us. We have an unpublished Frank Miller piece that I had done a pinup for Frank for Sin City, and his deal was always, you do a pinup for me, I'll do a pinup for you. And so we have a Christine Spar piece that's never seen print. We have a Travis Cheris piece that was done for an Italian collector that I found online, and that we got the scan. It's a beautiful Grendel Prime piece. Paul Pope's going to do one. Dave Johnson's going to do one. So it's more just opportunity. And again, I like so many artists. And I like so much stuff that... Shoot me! Who would you like to see? How about that?
Like when you were breaking into the field early, it's great. Like even ones that maybe passed it. Yeah, Kirby or Kane or...
Well, you know, I loved all that shit. You know, when you look at this very early Black and White Kamikos, it was obviously that I had just seen manga for the first time. You know, I wasn't very good at incorporating that, but was trying. You know, I've since, you know, I keep going more and more to the Alex Toth camp of, you know, when in doubt, leave it out. You know, as simple as can be is best. I kind of remember in my early days, or younger days, an Edgar Allan Poe quote that Poe always said that in a short story, every word must tell. And that means that, you know, you don't have any room for any extra bullshit, you know. And I feel that way in comics. It's not that I don't like, you know, I like Art Adams' stuff, I like Jeff Darrow's stuff. It's just not the way I like to approach it. I'm almost like I'm paring it down to exactly what's necessary, and that's all, you know.
Sure,
yeah, I'd love to see Michael Golden do something,
yeah. That's cool. Yes, sir.
And you were just talking about your art and how it's evolved over the years. It seems to me that there have been a couple of points where, as fans, we've got to see big drastic changes, like when you did the Demon Story and the Batman Faces, and then when you start doing the Batman, me and the Monster Man.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way too? All of a sudden, it's like, okay, I've moved on to it.
Yeah, no, I keep trying to mix it up, you know, or I keep trying to let the story inform the art.
With your take on Batman, too, of how you look at him, I also like how you draw him, where he's not in the rubberized suit.
Mm-hmm,
he's
mm-hmm.
just like a regular guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can see that in the poses that you do with him, and it works.
Yeah, well, I like the guys in costume deal, you know. I mean,
the only guy in film that I've seen be able to do it is the fan film, where they got a real body guy.
Oh, you mean the Sandy Clary?
Yeah.
He looked good, too.
Yeah.
And in Monster Men, particularly, I have, you know, he's still working things out. Like the net, when in the final episode of the Monster Men, the net he uses to net that guy. Well, it's a fishing net they use for sharks and marlins, you know. It's not some special Wayne Tech bullshit, you know. And then he uses these bolos to wrap up two of them and uses a Mountaineer's camming device, which is the thing that ratchets in, you know, and... was trying to make it seem that he was, and I don't know if you've all read The Mad Monk, but there's a scene where he's actually casting silver batarangs, and Alfred says to him, I take it this is what's become of the silver candlesticks that are missing from the East dining room. Because that's the way Bruce would do it. He'd be like, I need silver. It was under development for a long time with Spyglass Entertainment, and they were a good production house, but they were a production house. What that means is they developed properties, and then they tried to sell it to a studio. And their first look deal was with Disney. Spyglass had done a variety of successful things, most notably M. Night Shyamalan's first three or four pictures. But then they also did that movie Reign of Fire, the Christian Bale, Matthew Mahoney, which, not a bad movie.
No, not at all.
Fucking tanked at the box office, right? Lost Disney millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars. Well, they had the first look deal with Disney. There was no way Disney was going to let them make another modern urban fantasy movie. And yet, they weren't going to say no, because no meant that they could take it somewhere else. Somebody told me one time that one of the biggest jobs in Hollywood is not making sure movies get made, but making sure movies don't get made somewhere else. So eventually, they re-upped the option several times, and eventually they were just like, look, we can't keep paying you for this option. And I was like, you can't keep the option. So the thing that gives me hope about Grendel is that Grendel has been optioned by Warner Brothers, by a big studio, for one of their big producers, a fellow named John Wells, who produces ER and The West Wing.
Yeah.
They seem very anxious and excited about it, and they have it in active development right now. So I believe it when the cameras start rolling and that giant check lands in my bank account.
Will you have an opportunity to write for it, or is it...
No, I don't want to write for it. My medium's not film, it's comics.
Okay.
But again... I'm glad it's kind of taken this long because Dark Horse has had such good success in recent years with comic book film adaptions of their comic books not only being very successful at the box office, but also going out of their way to make sure it's faithful to the comic book instead of trying to fix the comic book. So that all seems pretty good. I mean, one change. You know, I'm not opposed to changing things. Like, for instance, I was talking to somebody earlier. I think Argent should not be a werewolf in the film. And one of the reasons is, A, chews up a lot of your budget. B, he's going to be more of an attention grabber on screen than the guy in the mask. All right? And we have a couple ideas on how to handle that to where it's still true to the character. You might even still get a little supernatural stuff in there, but it won't be this werewolf slopping around through the shadows the whole time. Grendel needs to be, like, the most captivating thing on screen, the scariest thing in the moment, you know? So... Okay, I've got time for like one or two.
Yeah, any other, someone who hasn't asked a question before we go to...
Yeah, you're on again, bud.
Okay. Yeah, by all means, sir.
Well, since they no longer have the rights to Mage, have there been any bites as far as any other studios?
There's always little, there's always a little fishing hook coming around. But I'm just kind of not interested in farming it around right now. My attitude is let Grendel get up and get rolling,
right.
And I have more muscle when it comes to making a Mage deal. For who, Mage?
Yeah.
Well, originally I wanted John Cusack, but he's too old now. I thought it would have been good, but...
Yeah, is there a WB kid that would be a good Kevin Matchstick? That's a good question.
I don't know. They're all too fucking pretty.
A little off topic you talked earlier. An upcoming artist, and I was just wondering what advice you might have for someone
getting into the comics field. Well, you got to bring your stuff. I mean, you claim you're working at an animation house. You know, bring stuff and just keep showing only your best stuff. You got to keep going to cons and cons where there are publisher reps. You know, and luckily you're an artist. If you were just a writer, it's a sad scene because your stuff, you need to have visuals attached. It just doesn't. Bob Schreck told me DC gets between 60 and 70 written submissions every day. So it needs to have visuals.
I'm sitting between Chuck Dixon and Derek Donovan, the creators behind the new Connor Hawk series for DC. And Chuck, I want to start with you. Nice to come back to Connor Hawk.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Derek made it easier by following my directions to the letter. But, you know, it's like putting on a comfortable leather jacket, as Ralph Lauren might say. And yeah, I had a lot of fun. Got to explore some stuff I didn't in my original run.
The idea of the tournament reminds me of your Richard Dragon limited series as well.
Well, you know, it's a martial arts thing, and Connor's always been a martial arts character, and you kind of get that Enter the Dragon vibe going. And I wanted to introduce a lot of bowmen, some we'd seen before, and then quite a few we hadn't. And, you know, my favorite is the evil Knievel type guy. What's his name? I can't remember.
Tony Crowfoot.
Tony Crowfoot.
Derek, your first experience with Connor Hawke and these characters?
First time working on him, but I don't know if this is why it came about. When I first met Chuck, I was like, hey, by the way, I'm actually a fan, you know, just from a fan point of view. I used to read the book when he was writing it and Rodolfo was drawing it. And, you know, I don't know how you are, but when I go to the shop, I'll usually have, like, separate piles. There's books I buy just because I think they're pretty, and I don't read them. I just flip them and go, ooh, and then put them aside. And then there's books that I read because they're good, and then there's the ones that are both. And that was one of those really, like, wow, this is just a great book for as long as it lasted. And, of course, when he showed up, I had to gush and do all that stuff. And I guess he remembered it because this was, you know, some years ago. You know, fast forward a couple of years later, I get an email. Hey, what are you doing? Yeah, want to come play with Connor Hawke? Yeah, sure, let's do that.
Very cool.
When
I don't remember that at all.
No. Seriously.
Oh, good. I just thought you'd be good at this.
Works for me.
What's coming up on the horizon? How far into the book are you?
I am on issue 5, so I'm pretty much wrapping it up. And, you know, smooth sailing, knock on wood, everything keeps going good. I hope everybody's happy with it. I had a blast. Don't know what's on the horizon for me just yet because, as I said, I'm still finishing it. But I am planning a trip up to New York, and I plan on going up to see the offices and kind of see if there's anything available for me. I'd love to keep working with Chuck, but, you know, powers bigger than me decide that one, you know.
Well, it's a good team-up as far as creators go, and I'm enjoying the action as well. And what's been the response on your board, Chuck, as far as readers?
Everybody's happy about it. They're not so happy about some of the events in the third issue, but that's my job. I used to torture my characters. Now I torture my readers. So,
well, people have to remember that just because something happened in issue 3, it's not, you know, it may not stay, the status quo might not stay that way by issue 5, obviously.
Well, dead is a status quo I can't change.
Well, as always, I'm a huge fan, Chuck, as you know, of your writing, and Derek, I think you're doing a great job as well as on the book. So, good luck to you guys, and you know, I hope a further Connor Hawke series comes of it.
Oh, great! Thanks a lot.
Your lips to Dan DiDio's ears.
Suntress back with one last technical snafu insert to just let you know what the next segment is. Going into my conversation with Dave Johnson, the fabulous illustrator of covers for DC's 100 Bullets, the Vertigo series that Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso do. Plus, he just finished a stint doing Joe Casey's second volume of Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes. In addition, Dave is a fantastic animator, and we're going to get into a really interesting discussion about his great work on shows like Ben 10, Justice League, and the pitfalls of working in animation these days. A very interesting conversation. But, of course, we got to start with the comics.
Fantastic work on 100 Bullets. It's always exciting to see what cover ideas you come up with. And I'm curious. I've had Brian on the show a couple times, and I've never asked him specifically how much input he has, and other than handing you a script or telling you about an arc to let you know how to scheme your covers.
Well, basically, the series started out, and not only did I have full scripts, but I had full art, inks, and everything from Eduardo. And if you look at the progression of covers, you'll notice that the covers get less and less montage-y and more graphically simple, simply because I was getting less and less info, and to the point where now I get basically less than a paragraph of a description of what Brian's thinking about writing, and I've got to come up with a cover for it. So all these great characters that Eduardo ends up drawing, you know, that I would have loved to have had on the cover, I don't get to use any of that, you know. So that's why you get, like, a cover with a symbol and with a bullet hole and a lot of, you know, a lot of my friends, they give me hell, unholy hell about, you know, you're getting that kind of money for such a, you know, and I'm like, but... Yeah, but, you know, you're not paying for Sergio Argoni's, I don't know if you heard the story, some kid wanted a drawing, and he goes, sure, $30, and the kid gives him $30, and he whips something out in literally 5 minutes, and the guy goes, that only took you 5 minutes, he goes, yes, but it took me a lifetime to learn how to do it that fast, and it's kind of the way I feel like with covers. It's not how, you know, a good cover doesn't necessarily mean, you know, it's fuller rendering and got a million characters on it. It's how well it stands off the stands. And that's basically what I started doing, you know, quite a few years ago. And now it seems like it's caught on, and it seems like a lot more people are, you know, doing more not that I invented it. I mean, as far as comics go, you can go back to Jim Steranko, but sure. Even he was inspired by paperback novel artists and you know, all the old guys. So another influence of mine is the art of old paperback novels. You know, back when it was a trashy medium, and the companies were letting artists and designers do whatever, it seemed like whatever the hell they wanted, as long as it was cool. And it's funny how paperback novels are no longer like that anymore. They're all like big words and a tiny little sliver of a photo or like a house on a hill with one light on, you know, and comics has kind of taken their place for creative freedom. And that's basically what I decided I was going to go for it. And I kept waiting for somebody to kick my butt and say, no, 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 but nobody ever did. And so I got more and more graphic and more simple, and nobody's complained yet, you know.
Well, it's nice. It literally is a pulp medium.
Yeah.
And it has become the new pulp medium, and it's nice that there are crime comics that can reflect that, you know, as we were talking about at breakfast this morning, the McGinnis kind of, you know, look at everything. So that's,
exactly, yeah.
You know.
And, you know, I try to do it sometimes with the regular superhero stuff, but, it's a little harder to do it with that, you know. But I try wherever I can. You know, it depends on the book. Sometimes I like to go old school classic, you know, pen and ink, like, you know, really have fun with it and stuff, but for the most part, it is what it is.
Animation. We talked about Ben 10, and you were the design guy for Ben 10, which is really cool. The Men of Action guys, Joe Casey and those guys.
Basically, the Men of Action, what they originally pitched was basically a Dial H for Hero kind of thing. I mean, the kid was supposed to be able to turn into human hero characters. And through the course of a couple of years of development, before I even came on, they changed, you know, somebody. I don't even necessarily know if it was the Men of Action guys who originally, it might have been Sam Register, who decided that it'd be cooler if it was aliens, and then not only aliens, but gross aliens, because kids like gross.
Sure.
And when I got brought on board, there was basically nothing designed, or there were, but they didn't show me any of it. And so all the designs came out of, you know, basically my head. And so even though, you know, Men of Action created it, you know, I visualized it. So
that's cool.
You know, seeing all the toys and all that is great, you know, but yeah, I don't even, you know, not only do I not get money for that, I gotta go out and buy my own damn toys, you know?
That's
it, yeah, it's...
We gotta go beat up Joe Casey. What the hell?
Well, Men of Action, it is so not their fault, and I love
like
those
Joe,
guys.
I do too, man.
And
guys.
It's more of a corporate thing, and you know, but it's one of those things where you know the job is dangerous when you take it, and you know you're gonna get, you know, effed in the A.
Yeah, you could, you know, it's a podcast, so, but that's fine.
Yeah. Well, I just think FDDA is funny anyway, so, eventually I plan on pitching my own stuff. I'm kind of biding my time and building, a pile of work that I can then say, hey, you know, look what I did, you know, you want to do something of mine now, so, and hopefully I'll be able to retain more control and maybe even a percentage point or something. I mean, that's the ultimate goal.
Here, here, absolutely.
You know, I mean, I love making money for companies, but eventually I would like for that money to be coming back to me, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, when I'm not exactly putting hand to paper, I'd like it to have a life of its own and be like Todd McFarlane or be like the Kevin Eastman and create something that I can sit back and
You know.
Cash the checks.
Cash the checks. That would be great.
That is the most revealing thing that I've learned in doing these interviews is, you know, just the shortcomings of animation in terms of, you know, like...
Well, what kills me is these are giant mega corporations and they don't understand that... They can't seem to understand, like, why somebody doesn't want to give them a great idea because of that fact. They don't... They're going to get screwed. And that's why you see things that just keep getting regurgitated because they have no really good new ideas coming in because nobody wants to... Who would
get exploited? Yeah.
Who would want to?
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
I mean, sure, you get a job out of it, but that's not even guaranteed. I know plenty of people that have pitched shows... And then they bought it, and then they weren't even allowed to work on it.
Wow.
So, once again, where's the motivation, you know?
Yeah.
And you're talking about, like, what would make a guy like me happy is such a tiny, tiny amount that it wouldn't even register with them. But they just want total control. They don't want any problems, like, with Superman and the family of Superman. No, they want to buy it outright, be done with it.
Sure.
And, unfortunately, it weakens all the ideas, and you don't see any really good ideas.
Yeah.
And even if somebody says, well, screw it, I'm going to do it anyway, then you have the problem of too many cooks in the kitchen. You've got executives that are only there to justify their jobs. They keep things in development for as long as they can. They say, can you change this bicep a little bit? Can you make it a little longer? Oh, no. Can we go back to shorter? Oh, can you make it a little fatter? And I've seen development times being eaten up just because, like I said, these suits have to justify their existence. Because if they just green light and let you go and do something good, well, then what do?
Right.
They can only greenlit so many shows. And then it just becomes ridiculous, like, well, why are you being hired? And it's so telling when you know, they'll let guys that have created these shows go before they'll let the executives who greenlit the shows go. You know, they lay them off, you know. And then they're like, well, where is he? He's working for somebody else now. And it's ridiculous, you know. But you can say that about any corporation, so.
Well, and I've noticed, too, another problem that so many shows are, it takes so long to put something to screen finally.
Yeah.
That sometimes there's a hit, but the contract is already up.
Yeah.
And the animation shop that puts something together is already working on something else.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that's probably going to happen to Legion of Superheroes. You know, I think just about everybody that was working on Legion is now on to other shows.
Wow.
And if it gets a pickup, they're going to have to restaff with completely new people, and they're going to have to hit. And not only that, they're probably going to have to hit the ground running. Because they're just like, well, now it's easy. You should be able to just start right away, and not realizing that they're going to have to train, you know, a lot of people how to do what the other people were already doing easy.
Sure.
And you know, it's cheaper and easier for companies just to let the entire staff go, and then they got to figure out how to restaff them when it comes time. And that's kind of sad. I mean, the salad days of animation are definitely over.
Yikes, man.
Because back in the old days, they would just keep the people on staff, and they'd be twiddling their thumbs, you know.
Sure. Well,
earning their paycheck.
Decades at Hanna-Barbera and Disney and all that stuff, yeah.
And unfortunately, I came in right at the end of that. You know, I mean, working with Bruce Timm and those guys, I mean, they've had an incredible run, and I've definitely been gainfully employed. I've never wanted for work. You know, I've actually turned down work. More than needed it, you know. And I've been extremely lucky to work for guys like Bruce, because you know most of my stuff has been, you know, or most of the shows I've worked on, if not all, have been pretty high quality.
You mentioned working with Bruce Timm, and that was on Batman Beyond, right?
Batman Beyond, and then Justice League, and he was kind of overseeing Legion of Superheroes, but that was more James Tucker. He was like an advisor, I guess, helping James out.
Will you be working on any of the DC Direct Animation projects coming up?
They wanted me on the Darwin Cook
New Frontiers,
but at that point in time, I had, you know, a lot of freelance, and I was a little burned out, so And, you know, I just wanted some time off, so I turned him down. They wanted me on Thundercats, but that hasn't been greenlit yet. So, so who the hell knows? Are there other ones coming up? Or?
Well, I know they were going to do Superman Doomsday, I had heard.
Oh, really?
And Judas Contract for the Titans.
Oh.
And I know George is, and Perez is involved in it.
Wow.
In some degree. I know Marv is involved with it, too. I think those are the three. New Frontier, yeah, I believe Superman Doomsday and that one.
Well, hopefully what I'm about to start working on is a Micronauts pitch with Sam Register, and I forgot the writer's name. I'm supposed to meet with him Monday.
Okay.
So basically we're going to start working on it when I get back from this con. And hopefully, if we sell it to a network and we start working on it, I've already talked to Mike Golden about doing some designs for it. He seemed up for it.
Outstanding.
I mean, he's a work for hire. So if we can come over the cash, I mean that might be the hard part, because I'm sure it's going to be a very low budget. You know, as unfortunately all animation is turning into, they definitely want you know, as much out of a buck as they can get, almost to the point where it's getting ridiculous. You know, I mean, we're only human, so, you know. But I figure if anybody's going to screw the concept up, it's going to be me. And I know no matter, even if I do the greatest job of my life, there'll be plenty of Micronauts fans that are going to hate it no matter what. But once again, I'd rather it be me. At least I'll be happy with it, as opposed to sitting back and watching somebody else, you know, totally screw it up.
Who the hell did that?
Yeah, I know. they said with that Micronauts Devils Do comic, I was dying that I didn't get a chance to. I wanted to be the guy who redesigned it. So unfortunately, it was already redesigned when I got to do the covers. So I had to follow somebody else's design, which is like turning a screw in my back, you know. So, but now I get my chance, so.
Very cool. And comics, other than 100 Bolts, anything coming up?
I just finished up the Earth's Mightiest Heroes covers. That was 8 issues, and.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Great work on that, man.
Yeah,
absolutely. That was a fun series. Joe's writing those things, and they're fantastic.
Yeah.
They really are.
And
that was really great. And a great period in the Avengers history, too, to.
Yeah, that's why I really wanted. Yeah, that's why I really wanted to do it, the chance to get to draw Hawkeye and the Vision and Giant Man and all that. And I've been having a blast. I've been trying to draw covers that I would like to collect if I was buying an old cover, you know. So other than that, you know, not too much. Maybe little things here and there, but nothing significant, you know. Going to try to keep myself open for this Micronauts thing.
Very cool. All right, man. Well, listen, I appreciate it. As I said, great injustice that one thing that isn't being planned by DC is some sort of collection of your 100 Bullets covers, and I hope Chip Kidd or somebody like that kind of, well, it dawns on him to maybe do something with it.
It's a policy, apparently, with DC, and you know, people always ask me if they're going to see that, and I'm like, you know, if you see an Adam Hughes cover collection, you know,
then
maybe,
coming.
But, I mean, I wouldn't even feel right if I got a cover collection before Adam Hughes did, you know?
Okay.
I mean, that would just be, like, ridiculous. So, well, we'll see. You know, maybe it might come from another company. Who knows?
We'll get those cards and letters to DC and make it happen. Dave Johnson, thanks a lot for your time, man.
Cool. Thank you very much.
I'm speaking with Steve Scott, artist who was doing a lot of work for DC, and looking at his table, I'm checking out some of the stuff. You've been working with Steve Niles on The Creeper?
Yes, I got to do 2 issues of The Creeper, issue 4 and 5, doing a little fill-in in between Justiniano's work, and it was a lot of fun. Got to draw Batman again, and the Joker, and Mad Scientist. There's just nothing better than doing that. I love it.
And Adam Beecham, I see you did a Legends of the Dark Knight with him on Batman.
Yeah, I sure did. I was really lucky. Joey Cavallari had saved that script for me for some time while he was having me do some work on Shadow Pact. And when I got the script in, I was just delighted. It was a really great self-contained story. And Adam liked how it turned out. He emailed me and just gave me a lot of praises. And I've really gotten a lot of good compliments on that particular book.
Very cool. And you were just showing me some art coming up, because I see you're going to be working with... Is that with Greg Rucka on Checkmate?
Yes. Yeah, he's still working on Checkmate.
Oh, yeah.
And Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of characters. I mean, I've done work on JLA in the past, and for some reason, this is just a little bit more taxing. There just seems to be more characters in this book. But it's a whole lot of fun. This issue 12, I'm getting to draw Bane, and never gotten a chance to tackle that character before, and he's right up my alley. I like drawing monsters and big guys, and he just got it all.
And Shadow Pact, I noticed, as well, with Bill Willingham.
Yes, and that was a lot of fun. My first time coming back into comics after a hiatus was working with Bill Willingham on that. It was a self-contained issue with Blue Devil, and it was just a whole riot. I mean, he's attacking this giant iguana through the city of Metropolis, through the city streets, and it's like, man, it's just a load of fun. A whole load of fun.
You enjoying obviously working with all the DCU characters?
Yeah. I love being back in comics.
What'd you do when that hiatus?
Well, I was a firefighter for 16 years.
Wow.
And I had gotten out of comics. I was doing work for Marvel and DC. Got out of comics and chose to continue my profession as a firefighter. Well, last year, my fiance and all, we'd lost everything in Hurricane Katrina. We lived on the Mississippi Gulf Coast.
Wow, okay.
And it took about 2 days for me to find out, because I was a firefighter, it took me about 2 days to find out if my family had survived. You know, we had so much going on, and there was just no way to break away. A casino had landed on our house. Everything we had was lost, but I found out they were okay, and I decided, you know, I'm going to get back into comics again. You know, if I were still drawing comics and not as a firefighter, I would have been with them during this time of tragedy.
Wow.
And doing something I'm very passionate about. So I took the big leap of faith, and it's scary, but I'm back in comics.
Well, that's cool. Are you going to be able to latch on and get a regular series?
That,
you know?
That is the game plan. I'm working on that right now. I'm fortunate enough to have Joey Cavallari is one of my editors, and also Joan Hilty.
Sure.
She's fantastic. And between the two of them, they're going to try to see what they can do for me. Right now, it's a proving ground to make sure they know I can do a monthly book. A lot of the guys out there, unfortunately, are not able to keep up with the monthly schedule, and it is tough to do. But I find it's a lot easier now that I'm doing it and only doing it. Before, when I was doing comics, I was doing it in a full-time job.
I understand. Like a lot of people, absolutely.
Yeah.
Starting out and everything.
Yes. It was a couple of the old-timers that told me, hey, pick the fire department, because they were struggling all their life doing comics. And, they said, hey, stay with the fire department and keep those benefits. But my passions are with drawing.
That's really cool. Well, it's beautiful stuff, man, and good luck. And glad to see, at least you're on the other end of Katrina. And now it's, time to put everything back together again. And I hope things work out. And we'll keep looking for your stuff. And what's coming up immediately that we can look forward to?
Well,
Checkmate's coming up.
Checkmate issue 11 and also issue 12. And then I'm going to find out what's happening in the future after that.
Good luck, man. Steve Scott, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right, taking a moment to speak with Michael Golden, the renowned artist and the creator of Rogue. And I must ask you, and as I'm sure you've heard a million times, what did you think of Anna Paquin's different depiction of Rogue?
Well, she did the version of Rogue as it exists now, and I had little or nothing to do with it. I mean, that's the way the character has evolved over the years, and that's by virtue of a lot of different creative people. Not much to say about it. She's cute.
Yeah. And charming, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
You're well known for your work on the Nom, and I am curious, with the Iraq War going on, how do you see it? I've heard Mario Puzo say back in the day that, World War II was easy to write about. That was the good war. He always found difficulty writing about Korea and Vietnam because they weren't popular wars. You and Larry were coming from a very different perspective. And a perspective that I think might be possible as well, given some American soldiers' views of the Iraq conflict. I know Marvel did a book, and I don't know if you would ever have any interest in doing any type of book on Iraq or anything.
I've never thought about it. That's an interesting question. I'll have to get back to you on that one.
Okay. I spoke to Dave Johnson. I hear Micronauts might be back in line for a new animated series, and he was telling me that he had given some preliminary discussions with
him. He did, in fact, mention that he is going to make a presentation about it. I think that'll be cool.
What have you got coming up?
Well, there's several artwork books coming out this year, one from Vanguard Publishing. EV Inc. is going to do one through Image. Story-wise, we're looking to get Spartan X finished up, or published, the finished version put out. Got some other creator-owned projects coming out, doing covers for Marvel, DC, Dynamic Forces, or Dynamite Entertainment. And There is two Modern Masters projects coming out. One is the regular interview books, and okay. then they also are doing a DVD on
it. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. So they come into the studio to watch your new work?
Yeah, we've already done it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
They spent 2 or 3 days at the house.
Looking over your shoulder?
Yeah. Went out and ate Mexican.
What about Michael Golden's Monsters, the poster book?
Oh, true. That portfolio just came out from EV Inc. through Image as well, I believe. And it's available. I'm toting it around to the conventions that I'm doing now, and so everybody can get a copy.
Outstanding print, too, of all the Marvel characters. Is that an FX special for this show?
For this show, yes, it was.
Wow. And, man, look at the Vampirella you got coming for the New York Comic Con in just a few weeks. That's
pretty, huh?
Darn pretty. But we expect that from you. That's great, man. And you deliver, which is awesome.
Thank you.
So,
if anybody's interested on information about me, my work, or where I'm going to make my gracious appearances, they can go to evainc@aol.com, and they can get on a mailing list, and we're in the process of setting up a website, the whole nine yards.
Fantastic. Really neat stuff, Michael, and really looking forward to it, and when we have a chance down the road, love to have a full-length conversation with you, but we wanted to stop by and say hello.
Do so.
Well, it was a pleasure to talk to you right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, I'm surrounded by a gaggle of creators from Desperado Publishing, and Joe Pruitt is the man behind Desperado, and Joe, I will allow you to give the roll call.
Okay, hi. Again, like you said, I'm Joe Pruitt, a publisher of Despro. To my right is Chris Marino, artist extraordinaire for Paul Jenkins Psychic. Across from me is Stefan Nilsson, who's our PR and marketing guy, but also a writer of his own right, writing Atomic Mike, Homer X. Nope. Okay, you tell me what you write.
Okay. Atomic Mike and Extinction.
That's right. Extinction, a book coming out from us this summer as well. And next to him is Mike Perkins, present-day artist on Captain America for Marvel. But we have a long history together, so we've done some books of his collecting Black Mist.
We don't talk about a long history.
Yes, it's a sweet, long, bitter history. And he's also the main artist of the new Mike Carey's One Side Up Bargains One Shot just came out from us as well.
Very cool. I'm going to start with Mike. Actually, I want to talk to Joe, because I had no idea that you at one time assisted Bob Burton on Flaming Carrot.
I actually broke into comics being Bob Burton's assistant on Flaming Carrot 23 through 29, way back in 1989.
Okay.
So I broke in as Bob's assistant basically right out of college, learning. You know, I actually was kind of an artist then. I thought I was an artist until I actually broke into the business, realized I wasn't. But I helped them, you know, do some, you know, maybe background inking, transcribing, cutting his grass, you know, whatever, you know, driving down the store to get some cigarettes, whatever it happened to be. But I kind of broke in with Bob, and, you know, brought me in and introduced me to all his friends. And that's where I got where I am now.
All right, now I'm like a fourth grade teacher. Perkins had a wise ass comment. I'm going to make him say it again. What was your wise ass comment?
Oh, no.
No, come on.
Do it.
No,
no.
Do it.
No, teacher, please, no. Not the cane.
It's nice to see that Flaming Carrot is coming out through Desperado now.
Yeah, actually, when I started Desperado, the first thing I went to is with the Bob and said, we need to bring the Carrot back. It's, you know, where I came up, but at the same time, it's one of my favorite books, and one reason I even started working with Bob in the first place, approaching him. So after, you know, a few kicks and screams, he agreed to do it. We put out 5 issues so far. Unfortunately, Bob had a major illness last year that kind of sidetracked him for a lot. He's back into writing now, but he's really not physically back into the drawing yet, so I'm not sure where Flaming Carrot is going to be or if it's going to come back. It's on hiatus right now, but I've enjoyed going from being an assistant of Flaming Carrot to being the publisher of Flaming Carrot.
Very cool. I also like the fact that you've got as a foundation beyond the new books that are coming out, and we're going to get to those in a second, a lot of the Caliber library is coming back through Desperado.
Yeah, that's one thing we do with Desperado as well. So, you know, I was the creative director of Caliber, and my brother Jim was the managing editor of Caliber, so I have a long history with Caliber. And so when I got back into the business, one of the first things I did as well is reach out to Gary Reed, the former publisher of Caliber. Gary came on board kind of like a consultant for me. Now he's more like into business development. Gary is a great writer himself, so I'm having him write some original stuff, but at the same time, Caliber has such a rich history, and a lot of the big-name guys, the talents today, came through Caliber one time or another, like Mike Perkins here. And so there's so much good stuff out there. I said, well, people are forgetting about this. So with Gary's permission as well, some of the creators, you know, I've had an opportunity to go through the library of stuff that we can pick out the best stuff and repackage it and bring it back to today's readers.
There's a couple of superhero titles, and Chris is involved with one of them, and I'll get to Chris in a second, but I like the fact that there's crime and horror. Ron Mars, Russian Sunset. Tell us about Russian Sunset.
Russian Sunset is a story about the base of the Russian mafia and their inroads into America. It's a lot of convoluted. When you think it's one thing, it actually ends up being another thing. I don't want to, you know, give too much away. It's a five-issue series that Ron is drawing with this really good Serbian artist, and I know I'm going to butcher his name, Mirko Kolak, and is an artist for us, a guy we picked up, and you know, got some, you know, big stars like Bart Sears and, you know, Rick Leonardi and
Luke Ross
and Colley Hammer are doing covers and stuff as well to make it stand out a little bit more. This is a series I'm excited about. We were originally published, solicited like in November from Image, but they started being a little scheduling process, so err on the side of caution. We pulled it off the schedule. We're going to bring it back probably like around July or August and make sure it comes out on the steady schedule.
Very cool. I know one book that came out was The Silencers, and that was an old Caliber, something that came out in issues of Caliber, and you guys have collected now, and it's come out for a January release.
Yeah, it just came out, I think, last week. It's R.G. Taylor and Mark Asquith. Mark is known for more for writing in television shows and stuff like that. R.G. is a guy, you know, did a lot of work in the you know, 90s, a lot with Caliber. He also did, like, Sandman Mystery Theater with Vertigo. He's a, what I would consider, artist, where the artists, you know, love his stuff. Fans don't know him as well, but it's one of those titles from Caliber that, again, was a very high-quality title. A lot of people know about, so let's try to get a new audience.
Very cool story, a Cold War story with a Canadian background, and very cool art, and I enjoyed it. I got to read it last night, in fact, and I thought it was a very entertaining story, and I'm all for more espionage and crime stories. That's why I'm looking forward to Russian Sunset and a lot of the other books that you guys put out.
Great, thanks.
And let's move on to Perkins, who, like I said, wise ass, who won't repeat his little smart comic. One-Sided Bargains, tell me about that.
It's a collection of Mike Carey's short stories. Well, one of them is Dr. Faustus, which I collaborated with him on, going back about 10 years now. But I still think it stands up on its own. The story's great. You know, you can't fault the story. You can fault my artwork in the story, but you can't fault the story. The other one is six, seven pages. It was a Negative Burn.
Okay.
And that was drawn by P.J. Holden, who's well known to 2000 AD readers. And then there's a short story in the back. Is it original?
It's actually an original prose story, never published.
Right, right. So they've collected them all into the one package, which is unfortunate because I've still got like 1,000 copies of Dr. Faustus left in my cupboard.
How about Black Mist? Tell me about Black Mist.
Black Mist was something I collaborated on with Jim Pruitt. That was round about the same time as the Dr. Faustus story. And it was... It was really a time when my style was evolving more into the style it's become now.
Okay.
So it's interesting to see those back in print. Hopefully they'll reach a whole lot more of a readership. But Black Mist follows on from events which take place from Raven Chronicles, which is another Caliber book, through Red Diaries, which is collected.
The Gary Reed Project.
Yep. And... Lonnie Talbot, who was one of the investigators, dies somewhere. I'm not going to say where, because people might want to read it. she becomes the embodiment of Carly, which controls the Black Mist. Black Mist was also another series which Jim Pruitt wrote as well, which took place in a kind of First World War. And then he wanted to update the concept, so it takes place kind of now, really, or 10 years ago now.
Okay.
So it's all involved in that as an investigation into Lonnie's death as well, involving people who used to love her and people who were close to her, some people who were just obsessed with her at that time. So it's all involved in that, and. Like I said, I think it still stands up on its own as a product, and I think it's still relevant for today's market as well.
The great thing about Black Mist, too, is that when it was published in Caliber originally, only 3 issues came out. It was never completed. So we're doing now at Desperado, we're actually doing the whole four-issue series.
Oh, that's great.
And we're also, for the first time, putting it in color. The first time it was printed in black and white.
Mike mentioned Negative Burn, and I don't want to pass that up because it's a great anthology. Wonderful creators, top to bottom on each issue. And there's a couple collections as well, am I correct?
Right. We did a best of the first 50 issues collection when we first came out. As for all that, we did two original graphic novels of it. Then it got to the point where I was hesitant to do Negative Burn again because I had a long 50-issue run, highly thought of. So I kind of didn't want to spoil that. But the reality came that there's so many good young creators out there who I really can't take the chance on and as far as doing an ongoing series or project like that. So it came to the idea, it's like, well, Negative Burn was known for, yeah, you had big creators in it, but if you look at it now, in hindsight, you see that a lot of the big creators in that book weren't big creators at the time. It was a place where we developed new creators who became the big creators today. And so I needed a training ground where I could actually take that chance with new guys and help develop them. So that's why I brought Negative Burn on a monthly basis.
And that's a great thing about looking at some of this old caliber stuff, because you're right. I mean, these are the names, like Phil Hester was there, and then so many of these, Mike was there. And I mean, that's the great thing is it's you get to see these guys back then. You know, it's Mike
John Cassaday as well.
John Cassaday, yeah.
John Cassaday, Mike Carey.
Mike Carey, yeah.
You know, Brian Bendis.
No.
Warren Ellis, Paul Jenkins, Jeff Smith. Dave Massey. Well, he was already a big name. Dave Massey Kelly.
Paul Pope. Yeah.
You know, he just goes on and on.
Brian Ballin. Yeah.
Brian Ballin, yes,
sir. Nobody heard of him at the time.
Brian Ballin. Speaking of which, they got the art book out right now, The Art of Brian Ballin. It looks like a beautiful production, and you were telling me before about, you know, just pouring through and looking at some of the old stuff and everything, and pretty cool some of the things you were able to find for the production of the book.
Yeah, and the Art of Brian Ballin book took us really about 2 years to get off the ground. It was a lot of fun. We found out, I mean, we did it chronologically from Brian, basically, being a kid to being present day today. We originally solicited 176 pages, but once we got the book going through, it ended up being 312 pages.
Wow.
So it just kept growing to this monster beast, and I'm very, very proud of it, and Brian's happy with it. I mean, it's a really good respect of the entire career of this fabulous artist. So it's not just a pinup book, which I did not want to do. I wanted to do a book about the artist itself.
Absolutely.
Himself. And so, I mean, it's been very successful. So we'll be doing some more that way. We're going to be doing Pete Craig Russell and Joe Jusko will be the next two we're going to be doing. But I got a wish list of some others as well. We're talking to a couple other artists as well. But it's good. I enjoy doing it. I think it'd be really good coffee table, you know, bookshelf, books we can keep forever and ever.
I look forward to the Pete Craig Russell thing. I think that's fantastic. We mentioned Paul Jenkins. I want to get Chris Moreno involved because Sidekicks is a really fun project. And it's funny because I think, tell me if I'm right, Chris, you see most of Paul's traditional superhero stuff, and he's a good action writer. He's a wonderful action writer. We've seen it on Frontline for Marvel Civil War. But he's got his humor side, and I think only maybe people that are reading his Newsarama column know how wacky Paul can be. And it's great that he found an artist like yourself that, you know, can bring something like Sidekicks and be the great humor project that it is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. I think Sidekick is, after knowing Paul, is probably the closest thing to Paul Jenkins in his natural state. I mean, you know, yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. You know, I think if you took a bat and you cracked Paul's head open with it, Sidekick is probably what would fall out.
He was so excited about this last summer when I talked to him, and he really was excited to have a guy like you bringing it to light and everything. And it's a wonderful fit. And you're another guy that, if you look at your Silent Devil stuff, Dracula and King Arthur, the Capone Dracula book as well. I mean, you do good traditional action, but this is your true side, your humor side, and everything. And it's a lot of fun. It's a guy who, you know, the typical kind of sidekick by day who just gets fed up with the hero that he's paired up with and decides to freelance for a bunch of other heroes?
Yeah, he's kind of schlubby, but at the same time, he's competent. It's almost, I guess if Batman were a total tool and Robin someday wised up and said, well, wait a minute, I'm smarter than this guy. Like, I don't deserve to be treated this way anymore. You know, to be flung into a room full of guys with guns, to kind of just fend for yourself while, you know, the hero, like, you know, disarms the bomb or anything like that, you know. But, you know, the odd thing is Eddie isn't necessarily much smarter either, because if he was fully capable,
he'd be his own hero.
He'd be his own hero.
Right.
So, you know, the idea that he's, you know, he's still, he's got the low enough self-esteem that he still feels like he needs to be a sidekick, you know, puts him in the predicament he's in. You know, it's just a lot of fun.
That's excellent. Stefan, now Joe kind of botched what book you're working on, so tell us what book you're working on.
I've got the two, Atomic Mike and Extinction. Atomic Mike was a book that I had done with another publisher that I brought over to Desperado when I brought the rest of my studio. It's basically, you know, traditional space monkey story. You know, can't go wrong with those. It's more towards the kid market. We're starting up the second series right now with the artist I have is Israel Cruz. So we're on the second series for that one. The other one, Extinction. Extinction is basically the, you know, what it is. It's the end of the world. You know, 90% of the human population has just been infected with a virus that's killing the body off, but at the same time, it's keeping them alive. It's going to be probably, you know, blocked in as a zombie book, but the main characters are not zombies. They're okay. Just basically ravaging humans that, you know, are going for whatever they can before they die.
Wow.
And, sounds like being a freelancer.
Yeah, like a freelancer, yeah. That one just got optioned by a director at Rainmaker.
Oh, great.
Ben Burton-Smith.
Wow.
That one. So we're working on that one to actually become a TV show right now. So,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, so I'll release it about the same time as the show.
Wonderful. Joe, I want to ask you about another book. Someone's not represented here, but Keith Giffen's Common Foe, which sounds like a really cool... I can't believe someone didn't think of something like this. Can you explain the concept?
Yeah, it's a really, really good concept. It's set in World War II. And you have the Germans and the Americans fighting over a French village that go all day, just kill each other. The night falls. And then from out the death underneath the village are what we'll say are historical vampires. Not the TV vampires or the movie vampires, but the real, you know, ancient German background vampires. And so the Germans and the Americans found to survive the night, they actually have to join forces to fight the common foe. And it's really good to see how, you know, because people on both sides are just people. They're just fighting for their country. And just see when they're thrown together, you can actually, you know, not see just the bad guys and the good guys. They're just all just regular people and a fight, which is the real evil. So, I mean, I just love the concept when it sent to me. I said, I'll do it with that. I didn't even finish reading the script.
That's great.
So,
you know, and I like, it seems to be a running thread through Desperado where there are a lot of books that are based on myth, and that's a common thing, but these are like hardcore myths, and I think kind of an education in some areas of the supernatural mythology that I think the average reader might not be aware of.
Yeah, I never thought about that, to the truth. I just pretty much publish, you know, what I think is good stuff. Most of our stuff, you know, does slant towards the fantasy, horror, you know, action-adventure type format. Perhaps that's what I like, you know, with the occasional, you know, humor stuff like the Sidekick Project. And the Flame of Carrot, but my whole goal is publish stuff I like, publish stuff I think everybody else should like, and to allow the creators to do whatever they want to do and just have fun doing it.
Phil Hester's getting a good opportunity to kind of spread his wings beyond his regular art. We know him from his collaborations with Andy Parks on so many mainstream things, but he really gets a chance to write in for you on books like The Atheist.
Phil's an amazing writer. I do not understand at all why Marvel DC is not giving him anything he wants to do to write. In my opinion, Phil is an amazing artist, but I honestly believe he's a better writer than he's an artist. I mean, just look at everything he's written. You know, Atheist is amazing. You know, Fire Breather, you know, The Coffin, you know, just on, you know, Deep Sleeper. I mean, everything he's written is just like, you know, just so in-depth and so, I just read and think, I'm in awe. I'm like, he's a great writer. And luckily, I'm the only one who's really given the shot to be a writer, so he keeps coming back to me.
That's cool. And Dusty Star is a neat concept. And
here's Andrew Robinson.
Good. We'll be able to pull Andrew over to talk about Dusty Star because I got a chance to read issue one last night, and it's pretty cool. All right, Chris is leaving. Chris, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
He just brought Dusty Star, so Andrew should then be walking in.
So Mike, well, here's Andrew Robinson now. Andrew, tell us about Dusty Star. I got to read the first issue last night, and I appreciate the amalgam of genres that you're putting together for this book.
Oh, thanks. Just trying to have fun. Into Westerns, but also sci-fi, and just throwing it together and see what happens.
Very cool. How long is this first story going to run you?
This should be like 5 issues. Okay. Should wrap this up.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, it is those great ideas of a female marshal in kind of a future world and fan of films like Zardoz and stuff like that, or any of those kind of amalgams? No?
No, I haven't seen that. I'm more like based this on like the Sergio Leone, the spaghetti westerns, and just going down that route.
That's cool. Were you a big fan of Hewlett's Tank Girl? Jimmy Hewlett's Tank Girl?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. I'm just a big fan of Jimmy Hewlett himself. I mean, his work is just really impressing me.
Well, it's nice to see the Western come back, too, because, what a great traditional way of telling stories, and I'm glad to see, and I say that for a lot of the genres that Desperado covers. I mean, it's high time. I mean, superheroes have their day, and they have their place, and everybody loves them, but nice to see that you guys are doing cool, interesting books.
Yeah, thank you.
I would also point out Saber is coming back, and I'm really excited about that. Don McGregor and Paul Galassi did the original book. It was one of the first graphic novels from Eclipse. And nice to see that you got Don back for a new slate of stories.
Oh, great. Yeah, this new series, it's a 5-issue series. It's actually a prelude to the original graphic novel that him and Paul Galassi did back in 79. I'm excited about it. Saber is a personal favorite from years and years ago. And when the possibility came out where Don might be interested in doing more on it, I mean, I didn't have to read it again. I'd have to read the script. I said, sure, let's do it right now.
Very cool.
So I'm excited about that. Again, it's a project we'd be debuting this summer with a yet-to-determine artist.
Okay.
But it's going to be somebody really talented and good. And because unfortunately we can't get Paul on the project. He's too busy making the big bucks. But, I mean, again, it's one thing I want to do. I'm publishing Saber, Dead World,
Yeah, Gary's book, Dead World, absolutely.
Flaming Care, books I enjoy that aren't out there anymore, I'm going to go get them. So if anybody's listening, you have a really, great book from the 80s or 90s, you want to bring it back, just give me a call.
There you go, Joe Pruitt from Desperado, and great line of books, and yes, bringing back cool old stuff, and also coming up with some great new concepts and good guys that are creators, and it's good product, folks. I mean, you got to check it out. And gentlemen, I appreciate your time today, and thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
So that'll do it for part one of our FXCon coverage, but don't worry, part two is on the way in just a couple days, and you're going to love it. You're going to hear from people like Colin Ferguson of the TV show Eureka, Gene Ha, more talk with Chuck Dixon and Mike Perkins. The great Art Baltazar will be joining us, along with Mark Sparaccio and Derek Fish and Shannon Chenoweth. It's all coming up on part two of our FXCon coverage. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the place on the web. You can find us at iTunes, our Comic Space page at comicspace.com/wordballoon, our MySpace page, myspace.com/wordballoon. We're also available at other podcasting catchers like Podcast Pickle, Podcast Alley, Odeo, you name it. If you'd like to email me and have any comments about Word Balloon, make sure you give me an email at john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2007.